Hello, everyone. Welcome to the weekly newscast here on PWPonderings.com. It is a big weekend from this past, and as you all know, tons of results over at PWPonderings.com/results. Of course, I'm Chris Schiste. I'm the web admin. I'm joined by Jerome Cuson, our senior editor. We also have guests, Jerome. Guests.
Well, we only have one guest right now. Hopefully, our second guest is able to make it. But for right now, we got Brian Brain on, so we're good to go, at least with our PWG preview.
Yes, indeedy.
So, Brian, it is, of course, a big weekend. It is Black Coal Sun. Honestly, that's just one of the best names ever. Event, right? How did this not happen before?
Exactly. And you love a good pun, so.
A little bit. December 12th, it takes place, of course, the American Legion, Post 308, Reseda, California. Headlined by Kyle O'Reilly versus Ricochet for the World Championship. The World's Cutest Tag Team defend their titles against Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. Chris Hero versus Trevor Lee, Chris Sabin and Matt Sydal versus the Young Bucks, Cedric Alexander versus Adam Cole, Gargano and the Best Friends versus ACH, Aaron Fox and Rich Swann, Bobby Fish versus Roderick Strong and Biff Busick versus Tommaso Ciampa versus Brian Cage versus UHA Nation. And God, I hope the ring survives that match. But Brian, you are of course our PWG expert. Tell us about the show. How excited are you for this?
I'm actually very excited because I think with some of these potential matches, it could be quite stellar right off the bat. I mean, that four-way is going to be off the charts, and it's the opening match. And Tommaso Ciampa seems to be in these four-way matches in PWG, which is fine by me because this style is perfect for that kind of match. So mixed in with Brian Cage and UHA Nation, like, tearing it up again, like, that's going to be sick. I think somehow this is going to lead to Brian Cage and UHA Nation teaming up in the match and then kind of figuring that we're going to get the new Unbreakable effing Machines, and that's my prediction. It's going to be Brian Cage and UHA Nation as a tag team for 2015, depending on how long UHA Nation stays in the PWG and in the Indies, because we all know WWE a call-up for him. So, but, yeah, I predict a strong tag team forming here tonight based on his four-way, and I think Brian Cage and UHA Nation are going to be a tag team in 2015. And I would give the victory to Tommaso Ciampa because I think he needs a singles victory. And I think Biff Busick's going to come in 2015 as well. As more of a tag team wrestler, I predict he, for 2015, will be more of a tag team with Drew Gulak. So, because I want to see more Drew Gulak and Biff Busick as a tag team during Bowl of the Week, and it was just great. And then that six-person tag, does anyone know any updates on Trent?
At this moment, no. I mean, I've been checking his Twitter kind of lately, and really no update, but, you know, it's probably going to happen. So.
I hope so. I mean, that's kind of his big return. So here's hoping that it's still going to be, the best friends, Johnny Gargano, unofficial, official best friend, I guess you'd call him. So that's going to be a sweet six-man tag, as you know. I mean, ACH, Aaron Fox, and Rich Swann just going to dance and tear it up all night long. And I hope they're going to do some weird dancing in the beginning and just get the crowd going, because, you know, it's always fun when they do that. So I think Chris Sabin and Matt Sydal are going to have, like, the best match they've had since coming back to the Indies. Against the Young Bucks. I mean, the potential for this match is off the charts. It's almost like the old generation versus the new generation, and that's kind of weird saying Chris Sabin and Matt Sydal are the old generation, but that match, I think, is going to have a lot of potential to be very eye-opening and just, and, you know, bringing Sabin and Matt Sydal back to the forefront, because I think a match with the Young Bucks is just going to be insane, and those two tearing it up, you know. And I think, you know, Chris Sabin and Matt Sydal would actually be a great tag team in the future. Their styles mesh very well. It'd be really interesting to see maybe if Kushida and Alex Shelley can somehow make it to PWG and kind of face up against Chris Sabin and Matt Sydal, and you got that kind of storyline with the former partners of Sabin and Alex Shelley. So that's kind of hoping for a 2015 matchup right there. Chris Hero and Trevor Lee is going to be really great because I think Trevor Lee is going to get the big one here too. He's just on a roll right now. I mean, he beat Adam Cole. He beat Michael Elgin. He beat Kevin Steen. He's a world beater right now. And I think with one more victory, he's going to challenge the winner between Kyle O'Reilly and Ricochet. And that's my prediction for that one. I think Trevor Lee's going to get a big one here. I don't think he's going to hit the package pile driver yet. I still think they're waiting for Trevor Lee to hit the package pile driver at the right moment when he has the big match. But this is not quite the big match, but it's getting there. And I think Trevor Lee's going to have a strong win over Chris Hero. I think the tag champs will retain because I think they're the great underdog. Even though they're the champs, they're still underdogs because of the whole size dynamic with Candice LeRae, So I think that the World Students Tag Team are going to go into DDT4 as the tag team champions, defending throughout the tournament, and be maybe the second team ever to defend the tag team titles all the way through the tournament. And, of course, we can't forget about Roderick Strong, Mr. Roderick, or Mr. ROH, I should call him. Maybe
he's not Mr. ROH here. Come on now.
Oh, okay, fine. The standard bearer, I guess. him and Bobby Fish, of course, are going to have a great match. I think that's going to be technically sound, some great chops, and some great probably leg work and probably back work from Roderick Strong. So, you know, up and down, this whole card is going to be great. I mean, Adam Cole's getting a match with Cedric Alexander. That's going to be really interesting because it's kind of, you know, Adam Cole's kind of been on this downslope ever since losing the world title in PWG. And let's see if he can kind of, you know, make a comeback or, I mean, we'll see where it goes. And based on the rumors, we don't know. Some of these might be the end of an era for some of these wrestlers here in PWG for a little bit. And, you know, it could be a new chapter, and this could be the end of a chapter. But depending on politics, we'll see how what happens in 2015, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it could be an end for quite a few wrestlers that we may not be seeing in PWG anymore. But, I mean, at the same time, this does open up a lot of spots, Brian. I mean, this... there are a lot of other talents out there that maybe we haven't seen in PWG that if these slots open, you know, guys like Trevor Lee, they're cementing themselves in. And that's what's so great about PWG, right? That this is such simple storytelling. They're just giving him wins. That's how you build a guy.
Exactly. Who would have thunk it, you know?
So
winning.
Simple. for the world title, though, I mean, obviously, I think this match, Kyle O'Reilly and Mixer, Kyle O'Reilly has had a banner year. Jerome and I talked about it last night when we discussed Final Battle. I mean, in PWG, just showing what he can do, I think other promotions really need to start taking notice of this.
Absolutely, and it's kind of, you know, the whole ROH versus DGUSA / I guess Lucha Underground. Kayfabe.
It's out there, dude. It's already out there.
Okay, I said it. Ricochet's Prince Puma. What can I say?
Dude, we saw Famous B on Lucha Underground. Come on now.
Can we just talk about how Ricochet has had the two worst mask gimmicks of all time?
That's right. He was.
It's been so obvious that it's been Ricochet both times.
Well, now that we have Kevin Ford on the line, Kevin Ford, you know, a guy that we're very glad to have on the show, you could talk to us all about Ricochet with a mask, right? Yeah.
I liked Helios. Like, was it a good idea to put him under a mask? No, but at least he like still wrestled as Ricochet. So who really cares?
There you go. But yeah, I mean, I'm not assuming a title change. I don't think any of us are. Right, guys? No? Kyle O'Reilly still retaining?
I think I have a bold prediction for you guys.
Do you?
So I think because of the Ring of Honor contractual situation and because of the Lucha Underground contractual situation, I think PWG is going to pull a big swerve on everyone and give Trevor Lee the belt on Friday.
Woohoo!
What? Really?
Yep, I think they're gonna do it. I think they're gonna pull the trigger because I think there's a lot of rumors going around. There's a lot of contractual stuff. Trevor Lee's the guy. I mean, it's obvious to anyone with two eyes that Trevor Lee is the next big thing in independent wrestling. So I think PWG should end the year by just giving him the title and moving forward with him. I mean, it seems to me to be a relatively easy decision at this point. I mean, he'll have gone over guys like Steen, Cole, Chris Hero. I mean, these are not only...
He hasn't beat Chris Hero quite yet, but he probably will.
let's just assume he beats Chris Hero. I mean, these are not only just guys that are big names in the world of independent wrestling, but these are like PWG icons that he's beaten. So, I don't know. Like, I think there's a scenario where O'Reilly could retain and where Ricochet could win, but these contractual situations are so complicated, you just don't know who's going to be where. So, and to me, I think it's in PWG's best interest to get the titles off of the guys who have these conflicts. So, to me, Trevor Lee, he's not under contract anywhere. He's obviously a guy that has shown that he can get over in Rosita. Just give him the belt now.
How is he not under contract to someone? Come on. That kind of boggles my mind. But yeah, that's pretty bold, Jerome. I got to say, now that you have that in my brain, now it's kind of festering.
I like it. I like bold predictions.
If I'm right.
You incepted us. You incepted us.
You did. On the third level, too. Though I don't like the discrimination against people with one eye. But anyway. anything else, Brian? I mean, because this is a PWG show. You're going to be there live. It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, it was a lot of fun hanging out with you at Bola, but this show...
Oh, why do you have to bring that up, Chris? Oh, jeez.
I just had to.
Ixnay on the Ola Bay with Kevin Ford here.
Yeah. So, anyway, that whole series of shows, that didn't happen. Anything else, Brian? Anything else you can think of for the show?
Well, I'm hoping Ronda Rousey is going to be there again so I can say hi. And that's about it. It's going to be awesome. I'll be tweeting results. And, that's about it. And now you got me thinking about Trevor Lee, man. Well, it's probably going to be nothing, but we'll see what happens. But my prediction is that Ricochet goes over. So there you go.
You know, if we were to parse this out, Brian tweeting out PWG results probably gets us our biggest numbers and our most follows in a given night. So, Brian, you are technically our most valuable tweeter.
MVT. Okay, I'll take it.
I mean, I think so, right, guys? I mean, that's there have been nights when we picked up like 50 followers for PWG show. So let's give Brian a little plaque. Kerry Silken gets a plaque. Brian gets a plaque.
Cool. Okay.
Well, I don't want to downplay what happened because this past weekend, Kevin Ford, you live tweeted for us from Chikara, their season finale, their big show, Tomorrow Never Dies, it was on iPay-Per-View. Apparently it did a lot better than Ring of Honor did in terms of people being able to see it. So, Kevin, it's great to have you on the show. Obviously, everyone that listens to our shows knows what some of the personal things you've been dealing with. But, man, it is great to have you on the newscast.
It's good to be on the newscast. I appreciate all that.
Absolutely. So, Chikara, Tomorrow Never Dies, guys. We saw the Young Lions Cup 11 finals. Heidi Lovelace, progressiveness is prevailing in professional wrestling. She defeated Missile Sultan to become the YLC champion. And she is the first woman, correct? We can all confirm this?
Yes.
Good. The match that can only be won via German suplex, Ashley Remington defeated Juan Francisco de Coronado with a bridging German suplex. Ooh, fancy. And then Eddie Kingston defeated Jimmy Jacobs with a backfist to the future twice, and he gets his 3 points so he can challenge for the Grand Championship. I think, Kevin, you and Justin both predicted that. I mean, hey, it was kind of obvious, but still. Before I run down the rest of these results, can you tell us a little bit about how was Kid Cyclone received by the crowd? I know he's been in a couple shows and everything, but he unmasked himself. His real name is Kevin Condrone, I guess?
Condren,
and then he freed the snow troll. So how was that?
Really awesome. He actually cut one heck of a promo. So Kingston wins. First of all, did any of the three of you see the show?
No.
Just so I know what I'm dealing with.
No.
Nope.
Okay, so nobody's seen it but me. Okay, great. So Kingston wins, and immediately Kid Cyclone runs out like in his mask, and he attacks Eddie Kingston from behind with a wrench and beats him down. And he starts cutting this promo how he can't believe that Eddie Kingston is being cheered by these people. You know, pretty much he was there when his fellow students got killed and didn't do anything about it. He kind of just sat by while other people started getting taken out of Chikara. He says, but people still cheer for Eddie Kingston because it's a tradition to cheer him. Another tradition they had in Chikara is keeping the mask sacred, and he says he's going to break that tradition. And he unmasks and reveals himself, and he says that he never wanted to be Kid Cyclone. He wants to be himself. He's now, goes by his real name of Kevin Condren. And he says he wants to right all the wrongs that Eddie Kingston has done in Chikara. And it was really passionate and just an awesome promo. Lots of shades of Vin Gerard and kind of what his character was, which the initial Vin Gerard character and the push he got was excellent. So this could be some really good stuff here. And then obviously Jimmy Jacobs had the snow troll out with him and tied him to the ring post. So as Condren was leaving, he just unchained him and let him go. And that was that. It was one of the highlights of the show, to be honest. And the show was really good. So to say that means something, not like, oh, the rest of the show was crap and this was a shining spot. It was just good stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're getting it in the chat room both. Matt says he's glad to hear you're getting better, Kevin. And then him and Sean S. both said that Condrone's promo was fantastic. A Shane Douglas-style promo. So that's some pretty high praise there. That's good. That's always a good way to start off someone's career, especially when they're undergoing that kind of a change in their character.
Right. And I didn't think that the Kid Cyclone character really had any legs as it was. So I think this is an incredible upgrade for him.
The Campeones de Parejas, 2 out of 3 falls. The Devastation Corporation, people, they're your new champions. They defeated the Throwbacks. The first fall went to them, the second fall went to the throwbacks, and then with a modified demolition device, which, I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to see that, won them the belts.
It was easily the best match of the night, and really, really, really good.
I can imagine that. I mean, the guy, you know, Max and Blaston McMaster, they, for their size, they are just two really talented guys. You know, because I've seen people make the comments like, oh, you know, how good could they really be, especially in Jakarta. I'm like, don't underestimate them, people. Don't underestimate them.
They've also improved a lot, so I'm giving them credit. And the throwbacks have just been amazing this year. So, yeah, I'll just say that easily the best match of the night.
In the Loser Leaves Jakarta match, Ultra Mantis Black defeated Delirious with the Cosmic Doom and the Praying Mantis Bomb. This is, I think, one of the most talked about things on the show. And Kevin, we're going to get your full thoughts on this right after. Delirious, he used the Eye of Tear on Hallowicked, who Yakuza kicked Mantis, and Frightmare, I guess he kind of crumbled under the Eye's effects, but both Frightmare and Hallowicked left after. So they, your prediction came true. They essentially turned. So there you go.
Yeah.
And then in the Cibernetico Royale, I mean, I'm not going to list all the eliminations, but Team Jakarta essentially won, people. Okay.
No, the Flood won.
Oh.
Soldier Ant won.
Soldier Ant won.
Oh, well, then I wrote the thing wrong. I'm going to have to rewrite that. Soldier Ant won.
Oops. So,
there we go. My bad, people. My bad. And yes, Max Smashmaster lost a lot of weight, I guess. I haven't noticed. And then in the Steel Cage match, the main event, Icarus reversed the Chokebreaker into the Chikara Special. He defeats Deucalion, and this is where we can get into this kind of, I don't want to say nerd talk, but come on now. Kevin, tell us all about this. Deucalion's dead, correct?
Right. So a while ago, the Deucalion killed off the Estonian Thunder Frog, who had this hammer of peace that he would carry around. It originally got smashed, but he brought back a bigger, better version of it at National Pro Wrestling Day. And so after he got killed by Deucalion, they put this YouTube video on their channel, kind of like a in loving memory of the Estonian Thunder Frog. But then at the end, you see someone picks up the hammer, and you don't see anybody's face. You just see their hand go down and pick it up. And the whole gimmick with him was that, kind of like Thor, only those who are worthy can pick it up. So only he could pick it up, and none of his opponents could, and no referee could, and nobody else could. So really, it was the mystery of who was able to pick up this hammer that wasn't the Thunder Frog. And as we discovered at the beginning of the match, it was Icarus. Icarus came out with the big hammer, and he actually left it outside of the ring. He didn't bring it with him in the match. Match happens, Icarus wins, and then the Flood comes out, actually led by Pinky Sanchez, who wasn't on the card. But then Jimmy Jacobs sort of makes his way through, and Deucalion's looking at all of them. And Jimmy Jacobs, I didn't really hear most of his promo, but I know at the end he said, "You made your bed and now you will die in it." And as the Jimmy Jacobs was talking and the Flood was all congregating, members of Jakarta, who had come out to support Icarus earlier in the match and just kind of cheerlead him on, were assembling to hand the hammer to Icarus. So when Jimmy Jacobs said that line, Icarus came off the top rope with the Thunder Frog's hammer and hit Deucalion with it, and then Deucalion was laid out and presumably taken out for good. So that's how all that went down.
So how was your live experience? How was the show and everything else? And we should be mentioning Icarus versus Chuck Taylor for the Grand Championship at the season premiere at the arena on January 25th.
Correct. And they announced that Jakarta will go over to the UK in April. So that's a pretty big deal. That's the first time they've been overseas, and that'll be about 8.5 years at that point, or 6.5 years. My apologies. So that's a pretty big deal. The show was very good. Lots of good matches. Like I said, the Devastation Corporation throwbacks match was the best match of the show that I thought. Good again. Jakarta is always really good at the season finales in terms of ending feuds, but also continuing stories. A lot of them giving you something to sink your teeth into to come back for the next season and see what's going on with everything else. Like you said, you had Hallowicked being brainwashed by the Eye of Tyr. And the Condren stuff, and then Soldier Ant. Now where does he go? The interesting thing I thought about Soldier Ant was they had two entrances set up for the show, one for the Jakarta people and one for the Flood people. And Soldier Ant, when he walked to go to the back, he kind of stopped and looked at both entrances and chose to leave through the Jakarta one. So that's kind of interesting in and of itself. But yeah, I don't know if you had any other questions about stuff or any particular match you wanted to hear about, but It was just really good stuff overall.
How was the look of the arena? Obviously, this is the first time you've been in that building since the Evolve CCW shot almost, I think, 2-3 years ago. So How did the arena look? How were the bathrooms? How was your arena experience?
It's a different looking building. It's bigger. Like, so I know you've been to the arena, Jerome, so you know how it basically was just like this room in and of itself. They basically knocked out part of one of the walls and just expanded it. And now that's where like the entrances and the bathrooms are. And that's where most of the merch areas are set up. So that where the arena used to be, it pretty much kind of looks the same. But all that's there is like where you'd set up the ring and all the chairs and the concession stand. And that's it. The bathroom is huge comparatively to the old ECW arena. Tons of sinks, tons of toilets. There's not an inch or two of piss on the floor in there. So that's really nice. It's just a much nicer, cleaner building. It's kind of weird. and the lighting structure they have built above the arena, the ring is excellent. I know I was talking to Zia, the Jakara photographer, and she said she loved the lighting. It makes for great pictures, and I'm sure it makes for great video and stuff. So, it's cool. It's definitely an improvement upon what it used to be.
How was the attendant? Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, so would you say the lighting is better for Jakara or the ROH pay-per-view?
I didn't see the ROH pay-per-view.
Okay.
But with the picture I saw, it's got to be the Jakara show. Because I heard people complaining about the lighting, but I thought the lighting looked all right, I guess. I don't know how it came off on the video.
I thought it looked fine. But I asked about the attendance, Kevin, because there was some discussion about it. So from someone who was there, how was the attendance?
They didn't sell out, but they weren't far from it. Like when the show first started, it's weird. I feel like a lot of people were late to the show because it seemed like more and more people came in as the show was progressing. And granted, there was a heavy rain in Philadelphia that day, so it could have been that could have caused traffic or accidents or you know, a number of problems. It could have just been that it was a Saturday night show when Jakara is used to running Sundays at the arena. I don't know, but it seemed like when the show started, there was a lot of empty seats in the rows in front of me. But as the show progressed, they started filling up, and I was looking at the other sides of the building. They looked pretty darn full themselves. Only really the seats that were in the way, way back were not occupied. So they did pretty darn well, but again, didn't sell out.
Anything else?
One thing that happened during the Mantis Delirious. First of all, Delirious came out painted in all black and green and looked really, really cool. And he had a Delirious Never Dies written on his back. And they had a really good match. But there was one moment where Delirious picks up Mantis's staff and hits him with it. And the skull from Mantis's hat flies off into the crowd. And it actually hit one of like the barriers in the building, and the skull smashed against it. It was actually really cool, but pretty terrifying at the time.
They could have rigged that, but that's amazing.
No, it worked out perfectly because I was like, "Oh god, that could hit a fan," but it ended up just hitting one of the.
That reminds me of who was it? Icarus was in a ladder match, and the ladder like kept screwing up and hit like hitting him in the face and whatnot, and it was. It worked within the context of the match because it's Icarus and you wanted to see him fail.
Yeah, it was absolutely perfect. I actually thought I've seen Kingston and Jacobs. I know, Jerome, you've seen they had a couple matches in AEW, I believe. They had that one basically non-match for Jakara in Chicago earlier this year. I think the grudge match they had at this show was easily the best of any of those matches. It was pretty much like, what would you want to see out of Jacobs and Kingston in terms of a brawl? Is pretty much what you got here. And just, again, a nice clean finish. They can move on from their thing, and Kingston can go do whatever he's going to do with Condren, and all will be well. So, and I thought the cage match was good because, you know, no one's seen Deucalion wrestle. You've only seen him do one move, and it was sort of a question like, how is this guy going to do an actual wrestling match? And him and Icarus did a very good job. There was lots of drama. People really got into it. Like, people can criticize Deucalion's choke breaker for what it is, because I've heard some people say it doesn't, you know, look that devastating or forever, which this move that's supposed to end people's careers, it should look really devastating. But I'll tell you what, when he lifted up Icarus for that move, the arena lost their minds and didn't want to see him hit it. And then when Icarus reversed into the Jakara special, people were losing it. So good on them for getting the move over despite all the criticism it has, and it worked. I don't think
the people criticizing it are Carr fans. I think the people who are spending the money to go to these shows, I think they're all in with this. You're either all in or you're all out of Carr at this point. So people who are at these shows, they're going to buy it and they're going to love it, and that's fine.
I have a question, though. So, Kevin, like, okay, so Jerome and I talked about this for Final Battle in that we liked the show, but one of the things that we didn't like was that it didn't really set up anything else new. And I know that for Chikara season finales, they usually do that too. But reading the results, what do you feel was set up for next year?
I think, well, obviously they set up Manus and Hallow Wicked to do some stuff, but this time the dynamic is switched with Manus being the Technico and Hallow Wicked being the Rudo. And Frightmare will kind of see where he falls in all this. For the Cybernetico, it was all about the ants, basically, especially towards the end. They did a lot of stuff with, you know, Green Ant trying to talk some sense into Soldier Ant, not wanting to fight him. But I think they're going, if I would suspect that they're saving Soldier Ant and Fire Ant in a singles match for, say, an Anniversario or something along those lines. But they can, like, I wouldn't surprise me if they did Soldier Ant versus Worker Ant at the season premiere, Soldier versus Green Ant at a bigger show. Or, you know, not a huge show, but some, you know, on the way to Anniversario, and then had Soldier Ant versus Fire Ant be a bigger match.
Sean is saying that there's the return of the Thunder Frog in a post show video. So, Kevin, I don't know if you've already seen that. Obviously, you didn't see it there live. So,
they didn't play it there. I didn't see it. Justin told me a little about it. Yeah, it sounds like that it's basically
he's back
teasing
alive.
The return of the Thunder Frog, but.
Right.
Again, I haven't seen it yet, but I'll definitely rewatch it again on DVD or whatever when it comes out and eventually see it. And then, like I said, they built Kingston and Condren to do something. And then, obviously, they already have their main event for their first show of 2015 with Icarus and Chuck Taylor. So, there you have it.
There you go. And at this point, I think for everyone listening, go check out our Podcast of Honor. Well, actually, it's their Final Battle review show with Jerome and myself, not necessarily a Podcast of Honor, but I think Jerome and I were pretty critical of that with Final Battle, even though some of the matches were really good and there was still a lot of questions, a lot more questions than we had answers to. So it sounds good, Kevin, that at least for Chikara fans, you guys kind of know, you have a roadmap, and that's what brings the fans back. So
Yeah, and they also announced that they're going to do National Pro Wrestling Day again. This time it's going to be in Norristown, Pennsylvania, which Wrestling is Fun runs a couple times a year. It's the Saturday after the Super Bowl. It's going to be, and it's going to be free again. I don't think there's word yet on who's going to be on it or if it's going to be an iPay-per-view, though I suspect it will be. But I know that was announced as well.
Oh, good. Well, then there you go. Jerome, Brian, did you guys have any other questions about the Chikara show?
I think we pretty much covered it all.
Definitely want to go back and watch the Campeonatos. Definitely going to check that one out.
Yeah,
that sounded like a fun match. I mean, everyone, you know, we watch the traffic on Twitter. We try to see what people are talking about. That match above almost everything else. Even the Delirious Turn, like I saw you tweet it and I saw some other people talk about it, but then it was just kind of, okay, it happened. And then it was over. But the tag match itself, everyone was talking about it, even beyond into the other matches. So.
Mm-hmm.
I guess probably one of the. I mean, I guess we can kind of talk about this a little bit. Kevin, you and Justin, you're probably going to discuss this, maybe do some year end stuff about Chikara. Is that one of the better matches of the year? I don't know if you're completely caught up on everything Chikara, you know, all the past DVDs and stuff, but.
You mean like in terms of like for. Is it the best match Chikara had in 2014?
Yes, or at least in the discussion.
Oh, absolutely. It's in the discussion. No doubt about it.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, everyone that's been following our stuff, our reviews, you know, TJ Hawk's been reviewing Chikara on, in terms of, all, you know, on-site written stuff. Kevin, you and Justin have been talking about the shows that you're catching up on Viva Chikara. So, yeah, I mean, I just kind of want to know because it's been different. I don't want to say difficult and make it sound like it's negative, but in terms of, you know, people commenting and reading the Chikara reviews, sometimes the match quality doesn't seem to be there. So.
It took some time. I'm not saying they're back to where they were before the shutdown or in their glory days, but there certainly was some frustration and just some aimlessness going on in the earlier days this year. And I And I think in later in the fall, they started getting it together. And I think the season finale left me with a good feeling as to where Jakar is going to go in its future. So I'm certainly more on board with what Jakar is doing now than I was in, say, May or June. So that's good, I think. And yeah, TJ Hawk just giving rave reviews to those Jakar shows.
Oh, yeah.
He's loving it. He wants to go back in a time machine and tell me he doesn't want to review the shows.
I was about to say, have you gotten any like old emails from TJ Hawk, like dated June something or other?
I think it would be funny if a DeLorean was parked outside of my house like tomorrow and TJ Hawk runs out. That would be pretty great.
I do have to say, I was pretty surprised. No Archibald Peck sighting on the show.
Yeah, that's true. That was interesting. I mean, I don't know what he's doing, so... It's not like we saw him at Final Battle or anything.
I was about to say, I heard he was up in Canada hunting mooses or something like that. That was the last rumor.
Oh, Kevin, you stole my joke. You grabbed the brass ring of that joke.
It was sitting there. I had to. You know, it is what it is.
That is terrible. All right, guys. So Jerome and I, we anticipated, you know, Kevin and Brian coming on talking about PWG and Chikara, two of the biggest things going on. Are there any, and Kevin and Brian, I'm assuming you guys haven't watched Ring of Honor. I think, Kevin, you just mentioned that. And Brian, you probably haven't either, correct?
I watched some of it. I ordered it on demand.
Do you have any thoughts either of you guys want to share in our last remaining minutes here?
Well, basically, that six-man tag was great, and the lighting was kind of whatever. Terrible, I guess you'd call it. I really watched just the last show I watched was the other pay-per-view, actually, for Ring of Honor. So, you know, overall, I think it did have some direction, I think, in terms of, like, building the, you know, the young guys for next year, especially Hanson. I mean, it seems like they got a plan for him, but in terms of, like, I didn't watch the main event yet. I heard it was great. But in terms of the main event, it's like, okay, so Jay Briscoe won, which is good, but then where do you go from here? Are they going to do, I don't know, I thought they would go Tommaso Ciampa and Jay Briscoe maybe, but Tommaso Ciampa lost. So, I mean, it seems like the main event for the world title is kind of like, you know, Michael Elgin, you know, Jay Briscoe, Adam Cole, and they kind of faced each other already. So I think AJ Styles has got to come in and take the belt.
Who won Survival of the Fittest?
Adam Cole.
Oh, well, that's stupid.
Yeah, this was his time. okay.
Welcome back to 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. I wish we could talk about spoilers for what happened in Ring of Honor's Tag Wars, but we won't. We won't get into that. But
You know what I think is amazing? I was just thinking about this. If you look at the independent scene, if you look at AAW, AIW, and obviously Chikara, all three of their heavyweight titles are currently being held by Chikara factory students, Eddie Kingston, Tim Donst, and Icarus.
Oh, that is interesting.
True.
Yeah, that does stand out.
And Jay Briscoe, well, I don't think he's going to be in Chikara ever again.
That would be amazing. But hey, you know what? I don't think Kingston will be in Ring of Honor for a little while. So there you go. Kind of goes both ways.
And by a little while, you mean ever again. Because... The tag match with Homicide against Red Dragon. I mean, it happened, but...
That is definitely something that happened. Kevin, are you going to be covering that match for your Chikara blog?
No, fuck no. There was no Chikara when that match happened.
Kevin and his loopholes.
Man, yeah. Getting out of that. Okay, so, well, yeah, I mean, you guys can all listen to what Jerome and I had to talk about. Obviously, Jerome and I had differing thoughts on the main event. I don't think... I'll be interested. I mean, Kevin and Brian, I'm sure you guys haven't heard it yet, but I'll be interested to see what you guys think about what Jerome said about the main event. Overall, a big weekend for results. Jerome and I, we already talked about, we recorded our reviews of Lucha Underground and the Ring of Honor episode. Basically, the go-home show, which, all I gotta say, guys, QT Marshall, who's on it twice. That's all I gotta say. And then we also covered some other news topics as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining us for the weekly newscast. Of course, Brian, Kevin, it was great to have you guys on. Hope to have you on again real soon. And everyone, go check us out. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Boom.
All right, so, Jerome, we're here after the live portion of the show. And, you know, we talked about PWG and Chikara. Well, also other things happened this weekend, Jerome. Amazing to think. Chikara had their pay-per-view. Final Battle had a pay-per-view. Well, we have an entire podcast discussing our thoughts on Final Battle, so go listen to that. Other shows this weekend included, though, Dreamwave had a pretty big show, On Point Wrestling, CWF Mid-Atlantic. We also have results for St. Louis Anarchy, 2CW, Shine had an iPay-per-view, and to crown it all, WXW and IPW UK. So go check those out, pwpondering.com/results. Jerome, we wanted to talk about Dreamwave Wrestling just for a little bit. Some major happenings on the show. Matt Cage, he is their champion. And, you know, I think this is one of those promotions, like I said, that we wish got more coverage from other places.
I wish Dreamwave's booking was better. That's the best thing that I can say about it. You know, I think in 2014, they've done a really good job of bringing in talent. But when you're bringing in someone like Johnny Gargano and he's losing to Chris Castro, and there's nothing wrong with Chris Castro, but I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I don't buy Johnny Gargano, a guy who's an international superstar at this point, losing to someone like Chris Castro. I mean, I talked about this with Ryan, sort of the predictability of the booking, and this show's just again, you know what that is. I mean, Chris Castro's beating Johnny Gargano. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of the other Dreamwave regulars went over in their respective matches, so...
Eric Cannon and Darren Corbin, they retained their tag titles against the Young Bucks.
No surprise. No surprise. It's very disappointing, because they're bringing in a lot of quality talent. The Young Bucks, Johnny Gargano, the Juicy Product, the Osirian Portal. They brought in so many great people, and the booking is just not reflective of that.
Right. So, yeah, as we said, Eric Cannon and Darren Corbin, they retained their tag titles. Matt Cage defeated Nick Brubaker to retain his Dreamwave title. We also saw Araya Davari defeat Christian Rose. That's Dreamwave. We understand building your own homegrown talent, but there's a balance to this. So, also, St. Louis Anarchy had Yuletide Terror, where their heavyweight champion, Gerald James, he fought Davey Vega to a 60-minute time limit draw, Jerome. In 2014, this happened.
I haven't seen the match, so I can't really comment on it.
Right, yeah, I was just kind of wondering if you had any thoughts on
that. Wrestled Candice LeRae, so that should be fun.
Oh, yeah, we'll watch that. ACH, he defeated Kyle O'Reilly, and I'm sure in one of their marquee matches. Johnny Gargano defeated Zach Sawyers, Christian Rose defeated Mikey McFinnigan.
Those are two matches I would definitely like to see as well. Midwest stalwarts. So,
definitely.
St. Louis Anarchy has done some fun stuff. I just wish I could see the shows.
Yeah, that can be an issue.
That's what it comes down to. I don't know if I can do.
Before we get into our review of Lucha Underground and Ring of Honor, let's talk about a show coming up next week. CZW Cage of Death, their big event of the season, and Jerome, I'm gonna run down the card, but I think we've been saying this for a little while. Not a lot of people talking about this show, for better or worse. I can't really find anyone talking about it. But it does take place December 13th in Voorhees, New Jersey. You have the Cage of Death itself for the CZW World Title. Sozo versus Black Jesus, Drew Gulak versus Biff Busick. Shane Strickland defends his Wire Championship against Joe Gacy. The OI4K defend their tag titles against the American Wolves. I don't even know how that's going to make it on iPay-per-view, but there you go. CZW owner DJ Hyde against Chris Dickinson. Greg Excellent and a mystery opponent versus Matt Tremont and a mystery opponent. Alexander James versus Rich Swann. Best of the best 14 qualifying scramble match. Caleb Conley versus Jonathan Gresham versus Alex Colon versus David Starr, who is going on his own now in CZW as part of their recent video, versus Mike Bailey versus Air Fox. That sounds insane. Not going to lie.
How is Jonathan Gresham not getting booked by more places? That is infuriating.
It really is.
I don't get it.
In the States. I'm not saying that. I don't get it either, Jerome, honestly. But hey, you know, you get to see him Beyond Wrestling, you get to see him in CZW, so I guess we should be thankful for that. Pepper Parks and Papa Don against Devin Moore and Lucky 13. The Beaver Boys.
Hey, Papa Don has a first name now, so you better use the full name, buddy.
I'm only seeing Papa Don. What is his first name?
I honestly don't remember. I'm a bad pro wrestler.
Greek God? Papa, is that his first name? Greek God? And then Papa
it's
Don?
Something else. It, it really doesn't matter. So
it really doesn't. But that's it. That is Cage of Death. You know, we'll probably have some type of coverage on it. I can't promise anything, but you can check it out, streamczw.com.
I don't know. Like, this, remember last year when people were making jokes about this show being bigger than Final Battle and better than Final Battle, and it was actually...
Well, because arguably the end was.
It arguably was. I mean, you had a lot of matches that people were looking forward to, and you had the surprise return of Nick Mondo at the end of the show, and people were buzzing about that. And you had Chris Hero and Drew Gulak, and the Colony versus the Beaver Boys. I mean, you just had a lot of really interesting, unique stuff that was kind of outdoing Ring of Honor, and there was definitely... You know, I'm not sure what the attendance was for both shows. I'm sure Ring of Honor had more people at it, but there was a lot more buzz surrounding Cage of Death than Ring of Honor last year, and it's not the case this year. No. This card is not good. This is not a card. I mean, this show is probably going to do very well, but it's only going to do well because of the Cage of Death name. It's only going to do well because people are spending their $20 because they go to Cage of Death no matter what. And that's never been my cup of tea. To me, a company's got to earn your money, and there's literally no way I'm sitting down to watch this show at any point.
And you know what's sad about it is that the talents on the show aren't even that bad. Like I said, I just had that qualifying scramble match with guys like Conley and Gresham and Fox and Mike Bailey and David Starr and Alex Colon. It's like, that's not a bad match, but no one's talking about it. And then you have OI4K,
and why would they, Chris?
We like.
I mean, the thing about CZW is they're and every company has this to an certain extent, but CZW seems very cliquish. You know, they're going to push their guys, and they're not going to really give a lot of emphasis to other people. And that's why you get Sozio as the CZW world champion. That's why you get Joe Gacy, who is... you know, I think he's okay. I think he's gotten better, but he's not. You know, is he someone that should be at the top of a card? I don't think so. I mean, Shane Strickland's another guy. I think he's decent in the ring, but
right,
you know,
their card placement.
You know, it's a situation where he's sort of positioned in CZW, and he really doesn't get a lot better when you're only wrestling in one place. I mean, there's a big difference between guys who wrestle for one company or one promotion and guys who really get out there and hustle, work in multiple places, work against different styles of opponents, and get better. I mean, that's the biggest difference between someone like Shane Strickland, who, you know, is sort of positioned in this one way, and someone like Cedric Alexander. I mean, Cedric Alexander is a guy who works in multiple places, and he works and been able to wrestle guys like AJ Styles and Michael Elgin and wrestling against some, you know, dream opponents. And, you know, you could argue that these two were sort of positioned similarly. And, you know, you could say the same thing about a number of other guys, that they all sort of started and, you know, became prominent at the same time. And, you know, some of these guys have gone on to greater success, and you don't see Shane Strickland's name in a lot of other places other than CZW and On Point Wrestling and places like that. And that's fine. But, you know, the match that I would say I'm interested in is OI4K versus the American Wolves. That's probably the match that's going to be the best. And who knows if it's even going to be able to air on iPay-per-view with, you know, I don't know what Edwards and Richards' commitments to TNA are, if they still have them, if they're still going to be a part of the company moving forward. But that'll be an interesting situation, to say the least.
I mean, I assume they are just because they're on some of the promotional material, but things change, you know. And let's talk about this, Joe. Matt Tremont, who we talked about last year during this time. People were talking about him. There was buzz. This year, he's in the Norman Smiley Memorial Bunkhouse Brawl Ultraviolent Food Fight for Life and Death. And I am not joking about
that. Oh, my God. He's wrestling Greg Excellent, right?
Yep.
That's pathetic. That is... I mean, this is a guy... And again, I say this all the time. I'm not the president of the Matt Tremont fan club. This is not someone that I'm going to run out and see... But when you have someone who loves CZW, this is all he's wanted to do, is be, you know, part of that ultra-violent legacy. And for whatever that's worth, if you've got a guy that is that passionate about CZW, this is a guy who loves the company, who's willing to die for it, who's maimed himself and taken some of the dumbest bumps that you'll ever see. It's very, very frustrating. And someone who maybe doesn't like that style, but at least appreciates and respects someone who is willing to go out there and b- bust his ass, and that's what he's willing to do. He's willing to go out there and bust his ass. And to see him in a match like this, I mean, it's a farce. That's all you can say about CZW at this point, is that they're a farce of a company, and it's a damn shame because they had the talent, they had potential this year, squandered every bit of it.
Yeah, and I, it's not like DJ Hyde isn't aware, because he's the one that had the match with Matt Tremont. He knows that Tremont's willing to do this to his body, and it's just kind of a shame. But we'll see. You know, I mean, I know people are going to watch this, and it's going to be one of the bigger events in independent wrestling. So, you know, still, let us know your thoughts. Mailbag at pwponderings.com. Let us know what you think. You know, maybe we're wrong, Jerome. Maybe we're wrong.
Who knows?
Exactly. It's wrestling. But, Jerome, let's talk about... Why don't we keep on this way? Let's talk about Ring of Honor TV from... Okay. It's from last week. So they had Final Battle this week. We talked about it. We have a whole podcast about it. Last week, though, for the November, you just say 28th through 30th weekend, because this week they ran, you know, the FB promos and stuff like that on their TV.
Which one's reviewing?
In the second home show to Final Battle, if I told you that QT Marshall had two matches on the show, I mean, granted, they did in total, I think it was like maybe like 7 minutes in total, but still...
Unbelievable.
What would you say?
I just... Inexplicable. I can understand if this is like they're running a house show in Lakeland, Florida, they need an extra body to be in a part of a four-way, fine, whatever. He lives in the area, no big deal. But you've got 60 minutes of television time. QT Marshall has never shown an ability to either get over, and he's never been particularly exciting in the ring. Why are you, A, giving him 7 to 10 minutes of television time? Number one. Number two, putting him over someone. I don't care if it's Cheeseburger or not. You're giving him a victory on television. Number three, you are giving him microphone time. Number four, you're having him challenge the Ring of Honor champion. Number five, the Ring of Honor champion is coming out. And granted, Marshall lost in like 30 seconds. But why the hell? It's still the principle of it.
Right. Why is your world champion even giving him the time of day?
Why does it matter?
I don't get it. Adam Page defeated Aaron Solo on the show in 3 minutes.
This is a squash. I mean, this is much more productive than the QT Marshall stuff. You know, you're giving Page a victory before he wrestles Roderick Strong. So I don't have anything against
this. I'm kind of okay with that. It makes some sense. And then we had the singles match. Adam Cole versus defeated Matt Sydal. Good match. I liked it. It was on TV. But Jerome, Matt Sydal, you wrote an article about this. He just lost, I can make some sense of this. The number one contender to the TV title loses to the number one contender of the world title. That kind of makes sense if you're talking about, you know, where, quote-unquote, ranking should be. But has Matt Sydal even won a match on TV yet?
Matt Sydal has won 0 matches on TV. I think he won 2 matches at house shows, but those really don't count.
No.
Do they?
No. I don't think so. Especially, if it didn't appear on TV, then
because
the casual
Chris,
fan wouldn't
what
know.
Title are we talking about?
The Ring of Honor TV title.
Exactly. The television title, Chris. That's what we're talking about. So, I mean, it is what it is. And so Matt Sydal and Cole are having this match. Sydal goes to the outside at one point, and Jay Lethal's on commentary, and Sydal goes after Lethal. Sydal's the babyface. Why is he going after Lethal? For no reason. There was it wasn't like Lethal did anything physical to him. It made no sense.
Nope. It literally didn't. I don't know if this is going to sound weird, but it's like the guy who is challenging for the TV title, no wins on TV, and yes, we all know he's supposed to be the babyface. And I understand that Truth Martini tried to, you know, recruit him, whatever you want to say, and he knows
and
that
Ring
he
of Honor is calling Sydal out for being stupid, by the way. The baby face. Again. We're talking about, like they were putting over the House of Truth as like, oh, they've led Matt Taven and Michael Elgin and Roderick Strong.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. They're talking about how many guys Truth Martini has led to championships. So this implies that the guy who doesn't join him is being kind of stupid about his career. It's like, what? You're not supposed to reinforce that. At least in my opinion, if it's a heel manager, you're not supposed to. I mean, granted, there is, what is it? It's the Jesse Ventura type of mentality where, you know what, he has to have credibility. And it is true. Truth Martini has led a lot of guys to titles. But it's the way he does it. Bring that up. Don't just make it sound as if, oh, yeah, Truth Martini's right. And Matt Sydal's
kind
of an idiot.
Steve Corino should be talking about that, and Kevin Kelly should be countering that with, like, oh, yes. Truth Martini, yeah, these guys have success, but, you know, at what cost? There's all kinds of interference and all kinds of shenanigans and all this hoopla surrounding it. So
the gorilla, you know, monsoon to his Jesse Ventura, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you – I mean, but I don't understand it. Like, what's going on, Chris? What is –
And the match was fine. Jerome and I are not saying the match wasn't good, because it was. It was fine. It was a good TV main event. But this is the go-home show for Final Battle. And if you take into account that this week, all they showed was an hour-long, which was pretty good, but an hour-long preview of what you can expect, that was the go-home show. And Jerome, if you saw that go-home show, were you excited to buy the pay-per-view?
Like, I mean, I wasn't. This has been a very strange build overall. I mean, and it just felt like everything was put together very last minute, and things sort of came together very quickly. And ultimately, the match that had the least promotion surrounding it turned out to be the best match, and that was the six-man tag. So that should tell you a lot. The two matches that arguably had the least storyline impact were the best matches, and that would be the tag team title match and the six-man tag. So there you go.
Even the four-way, for what it was good. But, and Hansen got a win on that in Final Battle, but is Hansen being... I mean, obviously, Hansen is being pushed somewhere, right? While Rowe is out, Hansen's kind of the guy, which is fine. I think he's an okay, you know, he's an okay to good talent. But on the TV, if you are just watching Ring of Honor TV, you would never know it. Which, I mean, Jerome, we talk about this all the time when it comes to the WWE. And I know that some people have criticized us, saying, hey, why do you guys always dump on WWE? It's like, well, because we like our wrestling to make sense. I'm sorry if that's what we want. And then you talk about Ring of Honor, it's like, they tape these shows out way in advance. They should know, this show is going to air on this weekend. This is what it should be about. It doesn't feel like
I think
that.
Taping four episodes in a night is not a productive use of time. I think that's one of the big problems that I see, is when you're taping four shows and you're trying to get all this talent on, by that fourth show, you're really running out of gas and the crowd really is burned out. I don't know what the solution is. I don't think that this is optimal, though. They've got to find a way to where they're taping like
Whitmer
two
has
shows.
Stated, I think he stated on the Observer interview that he did, that they are seemingly for the future only going to be taping three per taping now, which
I mean,
an
that's better. I think two is better, and then do like bonus stuff, like do
or
a
show the home, show them the DVD stuff. I mean, they do it so much anyway. They show the Glory Bounder, they show the New Japan stuff.
That honestly would be what I would do anyway, is to just pick the best matches from the house shows and sort of film angles around it and, you know, find different ways of doing things. I don't think...
And delay it a little bit so that the people that buy the DVDs or the VOD don't feel like they got cheated. It's like, hey, you can watch this sooner, you get the complete match, and on TV you're getting, you know, an abridged version. So there's still incentive, right?
I mean, that to me is, I think, what they should have done from the very, very start, especially because, you know, they want to run these live shows and, you know, the continuity just gets screwed up so much and it's,
We'll talk about this in the future, but Jerome, Tag Wars 2014, that happened.
They taped 4 weeks of post-Final Battle television 2 weeks beforehand.
and what's that part is, we don't even know if it's post-Final, I mean, it's post-Final Battle technically, because it's showing after, but the event itself was called Road to Final Battle, so these might show on air before, until they show Final Battle, it's just a mess.
Oh, my eyes are crossing. I don't get it.
Yeah, it hurts.
Why would you call an event Road to Final Battle when all of it is airing after Final Battle?
Maybe the TV people don't know that happened, Jerome. Oh, wait. They had ads and everything saying Final Battle this week.
I don't get... Chris, I want my wrestling to make sense, and I want...
I think you're asking too much in 2014, Jerome.
This isn't that hard. Lucha Underground, they get it. I mean, the TV is taped way in advance, but at least there's continuity.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's talk about this week's edition of Lucha Underground. You can check out Barry the Lad's review of it. It opened up. Okay, Jerome, we gotta talk about this. So,
do we have to talk about this?
We do.
Elise degrading her own gender.
Yes. Okay. Son of Havoc. Eve Elise is cutting a promo. And hey, I think anyone that watches Shine and. Has she fought in Shimmer? I know she's done in Shine, but is she in Shimmer?
I think she was at Shimmer 62, I think she wrestled.
Okay. Anyway, she's in a lot of prominent female promotions. She's a good talent. I would say very good. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of her matches, but people tell me she's really good. She's cutting the promo for Son of Havoc, who we all know, breaking kayfabe, it's Matt Cross. He can speak English, and he's cut a promo on the show already. But there she is, opening the show saying, Son of Havoc will not stand for this. He's fought men half, you know, half-sized men, meaning, you know, Masquerita Sagrada, and he's fought women. It's like, what?
Ivelisse, you're a woman. So what are you doing?
You're saying that you're less than, which I mean, I kind of get. Is that the character aspect, Jerome? Is that they are supposed to be the backwards thinking, and then he faced Pimpinela Escarita
last week, or was it last week or 2 weeks ago? She's been in an intergender match. She was in a tag. I don't get it.
This but Jerome, pretty bad she name. Was the woman facing the man. That's different than a man facing a woman.
I would have reshot this promo backstage or whatever. I would never have shown this on TV because it came off very, very poorly.
It was so weird. And then okay, so then Pimpinela Escarita makes his debut. Okay, we gotta talk about this just because. I mean, I think
so. We have
you
to explain the culture
same.
First.
Yeah. Okay. So the Exoticos. They are, okay, they're gay, and they
some
are very...
Gay. Some
are gay. Yeah, that's gay. What I was trying to say. That's right, because I'm not trying to insult anyone, but some of them are gay, but some of them aren't, but they are portraying these characters that are very flamboyant. They have, you would say, effeminate characteristics, and that's...
Men that dress up as women, and yes. They're not considered...
But I don't want to degrade them by saying, oh, they're just cross-dressers. That's all they are. That's what I'm trying to not do.
I don't think they would be considered transgendered because they don't... Most of them, I would guess, and I don't want to judge, but
yeah.
Some of them don't act like women outside of the ring. They do this
exactly.
As part of a wrestling character, just as, you know, The Undertaker was a dead man. These are men dressing up as women. Some of them legitimately are gay.
Some of them
are
not. But they're portraying a character.
But in Mexico and even Japan, I mean, Dragon Gate has Yosuke Santa Maria. And
right.
He plays...
And way back when, we had Razor Ramon HG, guys. Remember that? That happened.
So someone like Yosuke Santa Maria also sort of plays the character very similarly. And the idea is that... these men portray women, and they sort of their characters are that they act as women, and it screws their opponents' minds.
Right.
They're screwing with their minds.
It's a psychological
warfare.
Advantage. Yeah.
You know, obviously, I think Cassandro did an episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast where he sort of talked about his own life. I think the New Yorker did an article about this.
I think they did recently. Too.
So you know, I'm not totally familiar with some of this, but. You know, in Mexico, it is that they have the Exoticos, and Matt Stryker and Vampiro's commentary was interesting. They did not handle the Exoticos very well. They compared this. Pimpinela.
Pimpinela Escarita. I know. I'm probably butchering it too, guys.
Pimpinela
so let's...
Escarita. They portrayed him and compared him to the Miz. What? No.
That line.
No. Bad.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's an inside joke. I mean, it's just so on its face that it's just, why go there?
That was really bizarre. I mean,
it was.
I just, the United States is just not ready to comprehend transgender people in general.
Right.
They're not.
And truth be told, Jerome and I are pretty progressive. We are not against it. We have nothing, you know, whatever. So no one messes us and say, oh, you guys don't understand.
And wrestling is 30 years behind the rest of the country anyway, so... Pro wrestling is especially not ready to deal with homosexual characters or exoticos. So I don't know how. I mean, it seemed like he was getting over pretty well with that specific audience, but that specific audience may be used to it, or they may be fans of AAA and CMLL and see the shows. So it's a little bit different, obviously. You know. I'm all for great wrestling, no matter who it is, whether it's men, women, men dressing up as women, midgets, whatever. I want good wrestling no matter what. So
Drum likes Hornswoggle, guys. That's what he just said.
I said I want good wrestling, not what Hornswoggle does. So this was a weird match. It was a little uncomfortable because the announcing was bad. I mean, Matt's
But Drone, can we talk about the officiating? How many times was Ivelisse in the ring?
Yeah, what? That was a little weird. Do they have disqualifications in Lucha Underground, or they always say referee's discretion, right?
They said referee's discretion, and I'm like, okay, but guys, it gets to a point where the internal logic isn't even making sense.
Rick Knox. It was Rick Knox in this match, right?
I think so.
Rick Knox, I mean, he's so used to the Young Bucks and PWG and all that stuff. He doesn't remember the rules, Chris. Rick Knox needs to go back to refereeing school and relearn the rules. I mean, he gets super kicked in the head and he forgets the rules.
It happens. It's understandable.
It happens. I mean, I like Rick Knox. Rick Knox is awesome.
He really is. So that was that match. I wouldn't call it a bad match. I think it's a little bit different. Do we think that the American...
So basically, Son of Havoc has lost to a woman, a dwarf, and an Exotico.
Right, because we can't say midget. Oh. Okay, so then next up, Mil Muertes defeated Famous B. And hey, I'm so happy for Famous B, Jerome. I really am. He's on
a national... I haven't seen Famous B in a long time, but it was very, very good.
It was, actually, yeah. It was another squash. Yeah, for what it was, though, it got the point across. And this is what I kind of think they should be doing with Mil Muertes. He really shouldn't be having, quote-unquote, competitive matches except for with guys that are built up and, that we have an understanding. I mean, yeah, the match with Drago, I thought it was good, but it's like you're introducing the character. You gotta build that up first. He's a monster and he's killing guys. And, of course, Katrina, yeah, she licked Famous B. Everyone's getting into the licking thing now. It happened. So, Drum, was there a video package in between this?
There was a Drago video package, and then yes. Drago lost the return match against...
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine. I sort of get what they're doing with King Cueto. It's sort of like he's a hunter, and, like, if he loses one match, then he can prepare for his opponents, and you saw that he was...
He's a hunter.
He was countering a number of different moves that Drago did in the first match this time around... So this made sense. I'm assuming a third match is forthcoming, but it's a little bit different. They're trying different things here, and this was sort of a more of a mid-card type feud that they've got going on. But at least they're trying. At least even the mid-carders like King Cueto, as well as
Drago and El Pentagon, they're getting good stuff.
At least
we're learning.
Storylines. That's the important thing. They've got storylines for themselves, and exactly. It's not like they're just being left to piss in the wind.
And it's not QT Marshall. So
most importantly, it's not QT Marshall.
So in the main event, Phoenix and Sexy Star defeated Chavo Guerrero Jr. and Pentagon Jr. You know what, Joe? I mean, I like this match. I'm not an aficionado on Lucha at all, but I dug it. I got it. And, hey, it was intergender too, Jerome. A woman was in the match with men. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I mean, Sexy Star really, she came off not well. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the quality of her three, the other three people she was in the ring with. But, I don't know, she just didn't look really, really look comfortable at all. I mean, I think Phoenix is obviously spectacular and... one of the best performers on this entire television show.
Right. It felt like the timing was off for her. Like, maybe she just didn't know what they were going for. Maybe they didn't relay that to her correctly. You know what I mean?
I mean, Pentagon is obviously someone who has worked the Lucha style, but Chavo Guerrero certainly doesn't. So, I don't know how that comes across, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, Chavo Guerrero was not pinned, so the storyline can continue with him wrestling either Phoenix or Sexy Star. The one thing you forgot to mention is that Johnny Mundo wants his $100,000, and he went after Cueto. And there was a promo segment where Mundo talked about wanting the $100,000, and Big Rick came out, and eventually Prince Puma came out, and then there was sort of a brawl. And next week we're going to see a ladder match between Puma, Mundo, and Big Rick, and the winner will get $100,000. So sort of paying off a storyline that's been going on for, I think, about over a month now. I think this is
since the beginning, the very first episode, because that's where this all ties in from. And you know what I like, Drum? It makes sense. The motivations that these characters have. Big Rick.
They want their money, and that's fine.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly. It's not hard to understand. It's basic, and the match is going to be great. And maybe not. You know, whatever. I think it's going to be great, given the three guys in it, and it just makes sense. That's what we want.
And I really liked that the Puma first. He sort of made the save for Mundo, and then based off of what happened last week, he started brawling with him because he's obviously not happy about being hit in the head with a chair. So
it was by mistake. Did he not understand that? It was by mistake.
I mean, he's still kind of pissed, though. I mean, if somebody hits me in the head with a chair,
You would be mad, Jerome, if I hit you in the head with a chair if I was trying to protect you.
We would have to fight. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I don't really trust you. Like, Puma has already been, like, trained to not trust Mundo, so it's sort of, it makes sense.
Yeah. And Conan, Conan has been a good mouthpiece for Puma. I mean, obviously, we all know who Prince Puma is. And I'm not saying that, you know, he shouldn't be cutting promos, but I think Conan has done well in that role.
Yes, Conan has been perfectly fine. You know, he's never going to be a wrestler in this company for obvious reasons. Yes. But, you know, I think Conan still serves a point. And with the style that they use with, you know, sort of the more cinematic elements of the show, Conan can still sort of serve a purpose and, you know, doesn't have to sort of be relegated to backstage duties. You know, he can sort of cut promos and do some talking for his guys, and it works out well.
Agreed. So, yeah, that was Lucha Underground and Ring of Honor. And as we said before, you can check out our podcast all about Final Battle. Jerome and I get into quite a debate about certain topics, but it was a fun show, and obviously we want to thank everyone who joined us on the podcast to talk about Chikara and PWG. And Jerome, unless there's anything else, why don't we take it home from there?
Twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor is the place you can find me, as well as all of my columns, including my daily hot takes, PWPonderings.com.
And for everyone listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave a 4- or 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who has used our links so far, including the High Spots and Amazon. Continue to use them throughout the holiday season. And we really appreciate it, guys.